This is Manya from Friendshipable, a Project BFF podcast. Along with my co-host Terry, we love talking about friendships, talking with others who think about friendships, and learning about these important relationships in our lives. If you like this content, please support us on Patreon, patreon.com/projectBFF, or subscribe to the podcast via your favorite podcast app. If you have a podcast, consider hosting it on Buzzsprout. We love it. They make it so easy. And we have a link in our show notes for you. Thanks. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Friendshipable, a Project BFF podcast. I am one of your hosts, Manya.
And I am also one of your hosts. I'm Terry. And today I get to introduce another Terry. Terry Tucker is joining us today, and we're so happy he has. Terry, hello.
Manya, Terry, thanks for having me on. I'm really looking forward to talking with you.
We are too. As we get started, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background?
Sure. So born and raised on the south side of Chicago, I am the oldest of three boys. You can't tell this from looking at me or from my voice, but I'm 6'8" tall. And I went to college on a basketball scholarship at the Citadel in Charleston, South Carolina. Sure. When I graduated from college, I'm really going to date myself now, but this was long before the internet was available to help people find employment. I moved home to find a job. And I found that first job in the corporate headquarters of Wendy's International, the hamburger chain, in their marketing department. That was the good news. The bad news was I lived with my parents for the next 3.5 years as I helped my mother care for my father and my grandmother, who were both dying of different forms of cancer. Professionally, as I said, started out at Wendy's, and then I went to work for the hospital that cared for my father and my grandmother. Then I made a major pivot in my life and became a police officer. Part of what I did during my law enforcement career was I was a SWAT hostage negotiator.
Wow.
After that, I started a school security consulting business, coached girls' high school basketball. But for the last 12 years now, I've been battling a rare form of cancer. And then I guess just finally, my wife and I have been married for 30 years. We have one child, a daughter, who's a graduate of the United States Air Force Academy and is an officer in the new branch of the military, the Space Force.
Space Force.
Wow. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, you should have her on. Get rid of me.
I know, I realized, that's so cool. All the other stuff, whatever.
You have to tell her that. It's like you went through this incredible life history and like they really got excited about it.
They're excited about Space Force.
Yeah.
Terry, you have had quite the journey professionally speaking, and I'm sure personally as well, which we are going to be delving into, but wow. And just before we hit record, listeners, I said to Terry, it seems like you've had so many different jobs. I said hostage negotiator and high school basketball coach. And what did you say, Terry?
They're pretty similar jobs, to be honest with you.
I feel like, I know some high school students, so maybe now that I'm thinking about it, yes, there must be some similarities there.
Yeah. Well, it was girls' high school basketball.
Oh, well, that.
And so, yeah. I think back on my life, I have two brothers. I went to an all-boys Catholic high school. I went to an all-male military college. And so you can imagine when my wife and I went to the OBGYN and said, do you want to know the sex of your baby? We're like, sure. It's like, well, you should buy pink. I was like, oh, no. You need to keep it in there until it's done. I have no idea how to deal with a girl. So, yeah.
I'm sure you figured it out pretty quickly.
Yeah. My daughter and I are very tight now.
She seems to have turned out quite well given where she went to school and what she's doing now. So I feel like
she takes after her mother. So yeah.
There you go.
Well, Terry, thank you for sharing your story. And, we wanted to talk when we reached out to you to come on here for Friendshipable, you wanted to talk about isolation and your journey as a cancer patient and some of the difficulties there. So can you just get us started? What is that story?
Yeah, so 2012, I'm coaching girls' high school basketball in Texas and have a callus break open on the bottom of my foot. And initially, don't think much of it, but eventually, after it doesn't heal, I go to see a podiatrist, a foot doctor friend of mine, and he takes an X-ray and says, "Terry, I think you have a cyst in there, and I can cut it out." And he does, and he shows it to me, and neither one of us have any concern, but he sends it off to pathology. And then 2 weeks later, I get the call from him. And as I said, he's a friend of mine. And the more difficulty he's having explaining to me what's going on, the more frightened I am becoming. Until finally, he just lays it out. He said, "Terry, I've been a doctor for 25 years, and I have never seen the form of cancer that you have. You have an incredibly rare form of melanoma, which most people think is too much exposure to the sun. Mine has nothing to do with sun exposure that appears on the bottom of my foot." And I was basically told when I was diagnosed that I'd be dead in 2 years. They had absolutely no treatment for me back in 2012. And so that started an odyssey that saw me on a drug called interferon for 5 years, a weekly injection that gave me the flu every week. My foot amputated in 2018, my leg amputated in 2020, and I still have tumors in my lungs, which I'm being treated for. So it's
My
been a 12-year
goodness.
journey that not only I've experienced, but certainly my friends and my family have also experienced.
Absolutely. Wow. That I can imagine how shocking it was getting that news.
Yeah, it was incredibly shocking. I mean, you're basically given a death sentence. And I thought, well, maybe I can turn a death sentence into a life sentence with the understanding that, when I die is really not something I have very much control over. So stop worrying about the dying part, start concentrating, focusing more on the living part of it. And that's what I've been trying to do.
What
Wow.
do you attribute to the upbringing you had, the life you've led, that gave you that path to hang on to of turning it around?
I think a couple of things. I think I really do have to go back to my family. My parents, taught my brothers and I the importance of family, of loving each other, of caring for each other, of supporting each other. And fast forward that to now, I think really what's gotten me through this is what I call my three Fs, which are faith, family, and friends. I have a very strong faith in God. I have a great family. And I have friends, and it's interesting. We're talking about isolation. I think cancer for me, but disease in general, can tend to isolate you from your friends initially, then your family, and then you get to a point where it almost isolates you from yourself, from the person that you really are. And so, the three Fs have been incredibly important in, I guess, rallying me to be able to continue to move forward as I face this disease.
Wow, I love that, the three F's. I mean,
Yeah.
that's thank goodness faith, family, and friends all start with F, because if one of those was a different letter, like, you just couldn't come up with
Yes.
that.
Yeah.
But I mean, I like it's easy to say that, and to see, you can see how each of those pieces could be very helpful to recovery. And talk about, I guess, we think about friendships here, and on Friendshipable and Project BFF. And I'm just curious, how was the experience when you were sharing with your friends, beyond your doctor friend, this news, and how did they take it, and how would you have wanted them to take it?
Yeah, I was diagnosed when I was 51 years old, so relatively young to be diagnosed with a terminal illness. And there were people that I was 100% convinced would be with me, would be in that foxhole with me, when the shooting started, so to speak, and would never leave me, who were like, no, I can't deal with this. I can't deal with the fact that you're still a relatively young man, a still relatively vital person that has this disease, and you're going to be dead in 2 years. No, I need to back away. And then there were people that I was 100% 100% convinced would never be there for me, would never rally around me that haven't left my side in the last 12 years. So it really is, I think adversity, I think a couple of things. I think one, you really don't know yourself until you've been tested by adversity. And I think the same thing's true with your friends. You really don't know who the people are going to be who are going to stay in that foxhole with you, no matter how bad it gets, until there's been some form of adversity. It's easy to be a friend with somebody when everything's going great. It's difficult when, you know, you're dealing or they're dealing with something that is very, you know, it's life threatening. And I'll give you a quick story. I had a 95-year-old friend of mine who I used to see him at the YMCA every day when I would work out. And when I got cancer, after my wife, he was the second person that I called. And I remember my first surgery, they removed the tumor on the bottom of my foot and the lymph nodes in my groin, and I didn't have to stay over at the hospital. So I came home. And literally 10 minutes after I was home, the phone rings. And his name was Bud. And he's like, Terry, I know you just got out of the hospital, but can I come over for 10 minutes? About 15 minutes later, here's this 95-year-old friend of mine, friend of ours, actually our family, who's standing in our living room with a fully cooked chicken and a pan of cream cheese Danish
that he
bought at Costco. And he said, here, you've got dinner for tonight and you've got breakfast for tomorrow. He didn't ask what I needed. He just got involved. And, you know, I think so many people kind of get to a point where, and we've done this, and I know I've done this. It's like, hey, if you need anything, give me a call.
Well, right.
I don't have time to give you a call. I'm worried about the cancer and all of the stuff's going on. But everything you need to have done at your house, I need to have done at my house as well. So don't ask. Just get involved and do something. Don't sit on the sidelines and try to convince yourself you're playing in the game.
Yeah.
Well, and you know this from your experience before this and your experience now, is that your friends have a lot of emotions about what's happening to you, and fear, and among them. And I know you're going to understand what I mean when I say this. Sometimes it's easier to be the person who the thing is happening to than it is to be the person who's supporting that person, because you, as a friend, you don't know as much as what's happening, and you've got all these emotions you're not sure what to do with.
You're absolutely right. That you're 100%. I know exactly where you're going with that. And you don't. I mean, people, it's easy. It's much easier for me, I think, to have cancer than it is certainly for my family and friends to watch me go through having cancer and try to sort of tiptoe on those landmines where, you know, did I say the right thing? Did I not say the right thing? Mm-hmm. Should I have said that? Should I not have said that? And I am very much a person who is kind of a, if you're a negative individual, if there's a lot of drama around you, I do not want you around me. I don't care how good of a friend you are. I can't deal with that kind of thing.
And is that in general? It's
definitely been in general. I'm on a clinical trial drug now that I was on with two other people. And one of them was a woman who, I loved her to death. I mean, we got our blood work done at the same time, saw the doctor at the same time, got our infusion at the same time, but she was so negative. Everything was wrong. Yeah. Everything was bad. And she was sucking the energy right out of me. You know, mm-hmm. It was like, I want to be here for you as a friend because we're going through the same thing. But at the same time, you are just sucking the life out of me. And I was, even her sister was like, you are the most negative person that I know. And she's unfortunately passed away. And I think a lot of the reason she passed away was because of her attitude. This, you know, nothing's right, nothing's good. This is all terrible. Well, it's not good, but mm-hmm. I can promise you there are things. I'm a better human being because I have cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't do the things I was good at anymore. So I do the things that are important. And I think that's one thing cancer's taught me. But it's those people that are always negative, that always want to make it about them, that really just sort of suck the life out of me. And I, you know, no matter how much they want to be my friend, they're just not somebody I want around me.
Yeah. You know, I'm still struck by your description when you told us about the cancer diagnosis and the isolation that you felt as getting that devastating news. And I feel like I'm not trying to trivialize it, but the thing I can relate to it, I haven't experienced what you are, but I think we all have experienced the isolation that came out of the pandemic 4 years ago. And, you know, and every once in a while, I do read or see the stories of people, of individuals who are still impacted by that. So I wonder if you could speak to that. That was a global instance where which caused isolation within families and friends, and still is to this day for some people.
You're absolutely right. And I think if COVID taught us anything, it's how much we need each other. You know, we're not good alone. We're not good separated, isolated from other people. You saw during COVID, alcoholism rates went up, drug abuse rates went up, domestic violence rates went up. We need each other to be good. I mean, I can't recover. I can't be treated for my disease without the help of other people, nurses, doctors, my family, my friends, and things like that. So, you know, these people that are kind of isolationists, you know, they live in their bubble. I don't know how they do that, because we need each other. And that was such a big lesson that I took out of COVID.
Yes.
That we can't do it. We're not good by ourselves. We need each other to be happy, to be healthy, to be successful in life. And I think that was absolutely drawn out when COVID happened. It was like, there you go. We need each other. We're not good separating each other from other people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, you mentioned people who say things like, let me know if you need something, right? Which isn't as helpful as I think we, those of us who say it, want it to be.
I'm going to be mindful now of how I know. Say that the next time.
And, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge that even a very well-meaning person, even an absolutely adored friend, can say something wrong, but that doesn't have to be the be-all and end-all of, you can say something wrong and your friend can be like, that's not helpful, or be upset about it, but you can move past it. And I'm just curious if you have any experiences like that of someone who maybe out of the gate maybe wasn't quite saying the right things, but then came around, or something like that.
I mean, that was one of the things that I learned from being a hostage negotiator, of how to choose your words, how to say things appropriately. And I'll give you an example. When we were negotiating, we would not ask why questions of people. Well, Terry, why did you do that? Wait a minute. Because why questions sound accusatory. They sound like, maybe I did something wrong, or you're telling me I shouldn't have done that. We used how and what questions. Well, Terry, what got us to that point? I can get the same information by asking a softer question and things like that. So this may be my problem, because I'm a little more in tune to it, a little more cognizant of how to ask hard questions, difficult questions, tough questions of people. And I do. And I want people to ask tough questions of me. I don't want to be let off the hook just because, oh, he's got cancer, you shouldn't say. No. If you want to know something, I've been on almost 700 podcasts around the world, and I've never not answered a question. I've never had somebody ask me something that it's like, no, if you want to know something, ask it. And I will do my best to answer that question. But sometimes people are almost too sensitive. If that makes sense. And they dance around what they want to know, or they dance around what they feel the other person needs to hear, and they never get it out there. They never put it out there. But you're right. I mean, people can, I mean, that's why we're all unique. We're all different. I mean, none of us is the same. And I love that about people, but it's really, you know, how you communicate with people. And I'll end with this. When I was a negotiator, they gave us a formula of how we communicate, not as negotiators, but how we as people communicate with each other. And the formula was 7-38-55. So 7% of how we communicate a message to each other are the words that we use. And think how we agonize over, did I say the right thing? Did I use the right word? It's only 7% of how you deliver a message. 38% was the tone of voice that we use with that message. And then 55% of how we deliver a message is our body language and facial expressions. You know, I mean, if we were talking and I'm on my device like this, what does that say? I'm not paying attention. You know, if I've got my arms crossed, that's a closed body position. It's like, I'm really not receptive to what you're saying and things like that. So our face and our body communicate more than half of any message that we're trying to communicate to another person.
And it's doing it without our awareness that we're doing it.
Right.
And I think that's also why it's possible to have the words that come out of your mouth maybe not be the best choice of words, but your friend can still understand where you came from, or know that, no, that's not a person I want to be around me, because all the rest of those pieces were closed off, pushing you away kind of thing. But you could, if the words aren't quite right, but the rest of it is, I'm here, I love you, I'm supporting you, then the words are less important. Like you sort of forgive them, right?
You do. I mean, and a lot of times you don't even hear it. It's the, it's what you're giving me. It's not the words. It's the emotion. It's pouring, you know, it's offering yourself, you know, in a way that's kind and compassionate and loving. Not, I don't even know what you just said, but you know, seriously, I mean, your body is telling me that you're there for me. And that's really what I want.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things. So given these numbers, just those numbers and nothing else, that's one of the reasons why the pandemic was so hard, why that isolation was so hard, because I mean, you know, we can see each other, but it's still different, and you are missing a lot of the real things that communicate between us.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was what was so hard as hostage negotiators. You know, we were, you know, somebody was barricaded in a room with a gun, I was not in that room, you know, I mean, just from a safety point of view. So I was listening based on the words they were saying and the tone of voice they were using, but I didn't have that 55%. I couldn't see if I said something to them and they kind of rolled their eyes like, oh, what an idiot. I can't believe Terry said that to me. You know, I didn't have that luxury. So we got pretty good at figuring things out, certainly based on what people said and how they said it, but also what they didn't say as well.
Well, yes, there's definitely that, the conspicuous absence of something that you expected. Cool.
Well, one of the things you described in about yourself, Terry, was, you know, the mission is to consistently enrich and improve lives through inspiring, diverse, uplifting content without sacrificing the relationships with family and friends. And I've written it down because I really wanted to feel the words, and just saying them out loud, it seems to be a really good summary of what you've been describing to us. All encompassing of what it is. And in the a few moments we have left, you know, do you want to help us even, you know, attach to that even more?
Sure. So this is something I love talking about. One of the nurses that takes care of me in the infusion center at the University of Colorado is a former hospice nurse. And I always love it when she takes care of me, because we dive deep into, you know, death and what happens afterwards. And she recommended a book to me called Imagine Heaven. And it's a book about people who have near-death experiences. And almost 100% of the stories in that book, whether the person sees Jesus or a saint or a relative or a friend, the one question that always gets asked, or seems to always get asked, is, how did you care for my people? How did you take care of my people? Which, another way to translate that is, how do we interact with each other? How do we care for each other?
Yeah.
So that connection that we have, again, going back to what we were talking about, that we didn't have during COVID, you know, it's almost God's way of saying, look, yeah, the Ten Commandments are great, but you know what? How did you treat each other? How did you take care of each other? How did you empathize with each other? And that's really, you know, if I want to be remembered for anything in my life, it's how I connected with other people. You know, how I was able to be there for them and form that connection. I think that's incredibly important. And we tend, I think, a lot of times to think it's all about us. It's not about us. It's not about what we get. It's about emptying ourselves out and what we give to other people.
Yeah. Wow.
I think that's a great wrap up of the conversation. Oh my gosh. I feel so, yeah. I really feel so inspired by what you've presented to and talked to us about today, and also very lightened too, because you are so positive about it. So yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Welcome.
Well, Terry, I echo what Terry just said and right back at you.
Yeah.
We've got the double Terrys here. Thank you so much for sharing this. And how can our listeners reach you and learn more about you and your work and your book?
So I have a blog sort of / website called Motivational Check. Every day I put up a thought for the day, and I usually put a question with it about how maybe you could apply it into your life. I have recommendations for books to read, videos to watch as well. You can leave me a message. That's all at motivationalcheck.com.
Excellent. Well, we'll put a link to that in the show notes so people can get in touch with you and learn more about you and your work. And I know you also do speaking, so, let people know more about who you are, because you have a really important message, and it's coming from a place that I think is hard for a lot of us to imagine. Mm-hmm. And so it's so cool that you are sharing that with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. I really enjoyed talking with both of you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Same
and
here.
To our listeners, thanks for joining us, and we will see you next time.